Blog Talk Radio.
In the endless reaches of the universe, there once existed a planet known as Krypton, a planet that burned like a green star in the distant heavens. There, civilization was far advanced and had brought forth a race of supermen whose mental and physical powers were developed to the absolute peak of human perfection. But there came a day when giant quakes threatened to destroy Krypton forever. One of the planet's leading scientists, sensing the approach of doom, placed his infant son in a small rocket ship and sent it hurtling in the direction of the Earth just as Krypton exploded. The rocket ship sped through star-studded space, landing safely on Earth with its precious burden, Krypton's sole survivor. A passing motorist found the uninjured child and took it to an orphanage. As the years went by and the child grew to maturity, he found himself possessed of amazing physical powers. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound, the infant of Krypton is now the man of steel, Superman! To best be in a position to use his amazing powers in a never-ending battle for truth and justice, Superman has assumed the disguise of Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper.
Folks, we appear to be having some difficulties, as usual. Welcome to the Comic Shop, as presented by Aftermath Radio. Let me see if I can bring the great Daryl B. We're expecting Mr. Larry Tye, who has a new book on a biography on Superman, so it should be very interesting. If I can bring young master Daryl B. on. Daryl, are you on?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, okay. Daryl, sorry about that. These things happen. It happens at the most inopportune moments. I'm having problems with my board. The captain is persona non grata today. He had something that came up, so unfortunately, we're going to have to helm this ship together, my brother. So I'm going to rely on you heavily.
No problem. I can tone down the craziness today because
this
is a special day.
Please. Again, folks, welcome to the Comic Shop. We have a special two-hour show. The first part, of course, is the Comic Shop, devoted to all things pulp, fantasy, sci-fi, you name it. Again, we're expecting Mr. Larry Tye, noted journalist and author. He has a new book. The book is called Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. And I think that's an apropos title. I think he is an enduring hero. It should be quite interesting to hear what Mr. Tye has to say concerning this fictional hero. What are your thoughts about this, Daryl? We spoke about this behind the scenes, about his book. Telling.
First thing, we both are under the recommendation that if you're a comic book fan and you haven't read any of these books about the creators in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and essentially how these creators got screwed, if you haven't read any of that material, go out, educate yourself. Go to your library, go online, pick up and read some of these books. You'll see why we pay attention to the rantings of, like, Alan Moore these days, or the rantings of a John Byrne, because you can see there's a historical precedent for these creators who have created some of the most enduring characters in history, some of the most, what we call, money-making characters in history, and how essentially they've been lowballed. You know, these guys, I mean, Schuster and Siegel created Superman. Until recent years, okay, he was probably the most popular hero, popular superhero there was. You know, we could get into the debate that these days Batman has kind of surpassed them, but at the same time, that S is universal. that ass on the chest. You know, sure, they have changed some things from when they originally created them, but truth, justice, the American way, apple pie, Ma Pa Kent, the Daily Bugle, even Lois Lane, you know, glasses to, as a secret identity, you know, all of this has endured through time. And these two creators, it's just amazing the difficulty they had in the beginning getting this off the ground, because you see it now and you see it's an enduring symbol everywhere. You're seeing even copies or broken mirror versions of Superman becoming popular everywhere, you know? And like with the Irredeemable series.
Well, hold on. You know what? Actually, let's I found the intro. Let's go to the – we're going backwards. So let's get into our intro, and then let's start it up again. Not unlike the Green Lantern movie.
Yeah.
Let's reboot this. Hold on one second.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Okay, folks, that's our version of the reboot. And again, we're expecting Mr. Larry Tai, who has a new book entitled Superman, The High Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. And I read the book in its entirety, and I couldn't stop reading it. I mean, there's so much going on with this book. It's not simply about Superman, but as the great Darryl B was attesting to, it has a lot to do with the backstory of Superman. And I mentioned this before. One would think that the story behind the creation of Superman is so compelling that that story would be worthy of a cinematic treatment. Wouldn't you think, Darryl?
Hey, yo, if they can make or have proposals for like J.K. Rowling's wife, and someone's even proposed a Grant Morrison movie, if you could do those two proposals, here are two Jewish kids. Well, yeah, two Jewish kids in America growing up between World War One and getting in the business in World War Two. And fighting with publication houses to get their thing published at the height of anti-Jewish sentiment around the world spurred on by Nazi Germany. I mean, if Inglourious Basterds could be a movie, you know.
Well, actually, I think, and I have to apologize for our boards, I think we have Mr. Tai on the line now. If he would just bear with us, we're having difficulties with our board. If I can bring him in without fanfare, unfortunately, I would prefer the fanfare, but these things they would happen when we have an esteemed guest. That's just the way things go. Mr. Tai, can you hear us? If I can get this to work. Darryl, this is why I need the captain, unfortunately, but he's not here. Let's try it again, if I can bring it back in. I see that he's here, but I'm having difficulty bringing the our apologies to the audience. Let's try it one more time.
Live radio, folks.
Yes, live radio. Oh, boy. If I can – today of all days, you know how smoothly our boards work? But the day that we needed to work the best, we're having difficulty bringing him in. Let me try one more thing here. I think we got him on now, actually.
Hello.
Yes, Mr. Tai.
Yes, how are you?
Hi, welcome to the comic shop. Hello?
Yeah, there it is. Yes, hi, great. Good to be with you.
Yes, welcome to the comic shop. Sorry about our technical difficulties. We had a whole bunch of fanfare for you, but our boards would go down not unlike a supervillain in your story, in your book.
Seriously.
Our boards go down, so please accept our apologies for that. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you.
Thank you. I enjoyed your read. Definitely a compelling book. And I guess my first question to you is, what was the catalyst behind you writing this book?
There were two reasons I wrote it. One was a serious reason, because I was interested in why Americans embrace the heroes that we do, and decided one of the ways to look at that was looking at what I think is the longest-lived hero of the last century, who is Superman. So I thought he would tell us something about himself and about ourselves. That was the serious part. The other part, which was the real driver, was I wanted to be 10 years old again, and writing this book made me feel that way.
I must say that in reading the book, I was just telling my co-host, Daryl B., about we were going back and forth about this book. And I don't know if you overheard this part, but the background on the development of the Superman character is so compelling. I'm wondering why Hollywood hasn't tapped into the story of Schuster and Siegel, the actual backdrop. Do you think that might be something worthy of a cinematic treatment?
I think it would be a brilliant cinematic treatment. The problem is that the company that would be the natural to do it, which is Warner Brothers, whose parent company owns Superman, is involved with this miserable lawsuit where they're fighting against Siegel and Schuster's heirs. And maybe someday that should be part of the settlement, that that everybody agrees that Superman stays intact and that they write a movie script for a great story of Siegel and Schuster. And they are the all-American story. The idea that these two boys who needed a hero so badly in their own lives, Jerry Siegel just losing his dad, and also both of them being classic nerds who were bullied on the playground, they needed a bulletproof hero in their lives at the very moment that America needed one, on the eve of World War II and in the midst of the Great Depression.
Hey, and hell, if George Reeves could get a movie about his life, I mean, Schuster and Siegel, that should be a natural, right?
It sure ought to be a natural, and I think that George Reeves got one because of the way he died, and Siegel and Schuster died in a more tragic but less sort of dramatic way. But I think that I hope it goes from your lips to the ears of Hollywood and that somebody decides to do a movie like that.
Would you say that it's fair to put Superman in the, I guess, as the catalyst for the comic book world that we know today? I mean, there were other, iterations of the comic book. You had the pulp books before that predated comic books. But would you say that the comics that we know today really started? I mean, if you factor in romance comics, war comics, westerns, would you say that Superman essentially put that genre on the map?
Yes, I would say two things. One is that the Superman sure as heck put on the map the genre of the superhero comic book, but I think that he was instrumental. The guy who initially hired Siegel and Schuster and who conceived of the first real comic book with original stories, not just reprints of newspaper comic strips, was this Major Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson. And his really first successful comic, and unfortunately he wasn't around by the time it was published, but the first really successful comic book was Superman. And I think that Siegel and Schuster are certainly the father of the superhero comic book, and I think among the fathers of comic books generally, in showing that this could compete with and produce stuff that was every bit as good as what was in the newspaper comic strips.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dara, go ahead.
Well, that's ironically funny to me, but at the same time, if these two men would have known what they would have spawned back then, you know, it's always impossible to know what's going to heck follow, but, I mean, the difficulties, the trials and tribulations each two guys went through, you know, I was just telling the audience that every comic book reader should read books about the creators during these times, because it'll open your eyes. And your book certainly does that, Mr. Tuck.
Well, I think that you're exactly right, and I call it the original sin of comic books. The idea that a character who would not just launch an industry, but would make billions of dollars for his owners over the years, the idea that they bought from Siegel and Schuster the perpetual rights to Superman for a combined grand total of $130 is a pretty sorry state of affairs. And I think that the that on the one hand, Siegel and Schuster got jobs, they got their comic books published, but they felt they deserved some ownership right, and given the money that was coming in on it, I think they deserved an ownership right.
Something else I want to mention, I think the audience should be aware of as well. Again, we're speaking to Mr. Larry Tye regarding his latest book on Superman. I thought it was a fascinating, if not an accurate analogy that you had with the $130 deal you just referenced and the purchase of Manhattan Island for $24. I chuckled when I read that because that really is the closest thing I can think of as far as really a real ripoff.
Could you go into that a little bit? Yes. So, I mean, I think that that those go down as among the greatest swindles ever. And the Native Americans who the Dutch bought New York from had no idea what was going on in terms of the world of finance as the Europeans defined it. Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster were two naive young men who had no idea just how valuable what they were selling was. And they thought that the guys who bought it from them, Jack Liebowitz and Harry Donenfeld, would take care of them, that they were looking out for their interests. And we know that you never trust anybody to take care of you. You develop contracts that call for you to get a specific share of all the profits, and and this was a tough thing. And yet they were also so delighted after all the years that they had been sending Superman out and nobody was paying attention, no publisher would have him. They were so delighted to get it published that they would have accepted $10 and not $130, and they just wanted it done.
I was wondering, you know, one thing I have to also commend you with your book, it also highlighted, or if anything, gave a snapshot of the times that these two young men were living in. Could you go into that a little bit? I mean, we're talking about the 1930s. They were very young. Actually, some of it was analogous to what we're dealing with now with the economy. How did that spur their fervor for writing this story about Superman, or rather just getting into the comic book business?
It spurred both. It spurred their fervor in writing the story because they understood the Superman, as he came out in the early comic books, written by Jerry and drawn by Joe, was a New Deal guy who was out to take down slumlords and was out there going after wife beaters and sort of the consummate liberal. And he was so much a part of his times. And the idea of comic books coming out as a way to entertain kids in an era when they had radio but they had no TV, that movies were not a big deal. It was a perfect time to come out with the comic books. It was a function of what was going on in America that was too poor to be able to afford lots of other entertainment. And the idea of a nickel and a dime comic book was really, really attractive. But Superman, from that first era, every decade after that, he was subtly redrawn and rewritten to reflect the new times. So in the 1930s, it was the New Deal and the bad economy. In the 40s, he helped take America to war. In the 1950s, the big menace in Superman comic books and in the country was the communists and the Soviet Union. You know, every year, we could go through every decade from the 30s to now and say Superman was reshaped for that era, which is part of his success, and yet he maintained this elemental core of knowing right from wrong and really representing justice and truth and something called the American way.
You know, go ahead, Joe.
And it's true. It's as goes Superman. You could argue as goes Superman, as goes the industry. He's the ultimate malleable. In other words, he can be shaped. The character and his mythos can be shaped with each time. And again, it's it was way beyond the time. I mean, it's like I said, I'm in awe of these guys making it, because not only did they make a great hero with great mythos, but it's the ultimate chameleon. Every time you could, yeah.
He was the ultimate chameleon, and yet it wouldn't have worked if he had changed sort of this basic notion of right and wrong. I think kids and their parents who were letting them buy these comic books wanted to have a sense that Superman represented something. And in every era, he changed everything from his politics to his hairstyle to even his job. He went from working for a newspaper to working in a TV station, but the essence of who he was, the sort of moral center, remained the same. And he was always the ultimate good guy, you know, next to Batman, who was a dark hero, and Spider-Man, who was anxious and fraught. Superman was quite simply good. And I think that so the combination is critical. Changing the outside and keeping constant the real reason that people were drawn to him in the first place.
Again, to our listening audience, you're speaking, you're listening to The Comic Shop. We're interviewing Mr. Larry Tai. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, again, 646-915-9620. You know, something else with your book, and I've always wondered about this, because I mentioned this at the top of the show, that as much as I am a lover of comic books, I love comic books, I've been reading them since I was 12, and I've been reading them ever since. I also like to read about comic books, not just comic books, and that's where your book comes in. But I'm thinking, again, we're talking about two young men, and there were a number of young men, Stanley Lieber, a.k.a. Stanley Lee, Stan Lee. They were young men at the time when they were doing these books. In your book, you say that Stan Lee is a bit reticent to talk about his ethnicity being an element in the development of his characters, but you're not so much saying that when it comes down to Schuster and Siegel, that they were perhaps a bit more upfront somewhat about being Jewish and
you can, Christians have over the years seen Superman as the ultimate Christ story. God sends his surviving son, his only son, to Earth to help show humanity that it can be better than it thought it could be. Buddhists often think of Superman as the ultimate Zen character. Atheists and agnostics think, God, this is the perfect secular messiah. We don't need religion at all. But I argue in my book that as much as all of those are legitimate, the real ownership is Superman is Jewish. And he's Jewish because Siegel and Schuster sent him from the planet Krypton with the name Kal-El, which in Hebrew means the vessel of God. He's Jewish because he's the perfect Moses and Exodus story. You know, parents trying to save their child by floating him instead of down a river, they float him out in space, and he is discovered by two Gentiles named Kent in the middle of Kansas, and they adopt him and they realize this kid is special. He's Jewish because in the final analysis, anybody with the last name that ends in M-A-N, in man, is either Jewish or a superhero or both. And I think that Jerry and Joe were having fun in presenting all these little hints of his ethnic origin.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of comical somewhat. I mean, I never looked at it that way, but now that I think about it, I mean, you know, is there somewhat of a running joke with Spider-Man, Batman, Superman?
You look at them all, and you pronounce them precisely that way, and I think it's a great running joke. It's also just, the fact is that all of America needed a hero in the late 1930s, early 40s, but nobody needed one more than Jews who were watching their relatives, like Jerry and Joe's relatives who were left in Eastern Europe, watching them be slaughtered. And I think that while they were not religious, they understood their parents' roots, and they understood the importance of a Jewish hero at that moment in history.
Do you think that the public, by and large, that they are aware that comic books essentially started out as a Jewish medium?
I think that anybody who studied is aware. You mentioned Stan Lieber. The creators of everybody from Superman and Batman to to Spider-Man and most of the heroes of that era were Jews for the simple reason that Jews, like African-Americans, couldn't get jobs in high-paid magazines or in advertising or wherever. There was enough racism and anti-Semitism, and so these smart young kids who wanted to get into the writing field, like Stan Lee, figured the only way they could do it was through comic books. And the reason that Lieber became Lee was because Stan always assumed that someday he'd write his great Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, and so he didn't want to tarnish his name with being a comic book writer. So he figured Lee is a good throwaway name for the comic books that he was going to do temporarily, and now, half a century later, he's still out there hawking comic books and still out there with a name that he took on as a ghost name.
Go ahead, Darryl. It seemed like you wanted to...
No, like I said, there's so many things about this where the irony is just hilarious when you think about it. But, you know, I never really thought of it that way. But when you look at most of the big stars today that were created back then, Jewish creators all over the place. So, you know, hey, it just goes to show that any race, you know, whatever your misconception is, as long as you have an imagination and the drive to put it to pen and paper, anything is possible.
Well, that's exactly the kind of story that I think we need to be telling about comic books, but that's also the kind of story that's represented in Superman. Basically, who's more of an outsider than an alien from the planet Krypton? And he came down and tried to find his role in this human world of all the biases and everything else, and managed to do it because he had this inner strength and the sense of right and wrong. And I think that's the lesson that Jerry and Joe were trying to give all of us.
Well, Mr. Ty, would you mind holding on for just a moment? In our show, we normally take a quick musical break.
Sure.
Once we take a musical break, we'll come right back to you. This is the Comic Shop again, folks. We have to keep it somewhat comical because it is the Comic Shop. So this musical number is gigantic. I'm sorry, actually, it's Johnny Quest theme. The Johnny Quest theme performed by Reverend Horton Heat. We'll be back in a few moments with Mr. Larry Ty discussing his book, Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. We'll be back in a few moments.
Stop the pigeon. 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 How? Get him. Get him. Get him. Let him. Stop that pigeon now.
Yeah. Okay, we're back. Again, that was Reverend Horton Heat doing a redo of the infamous Johnny Quest theme from the 60s, actually. I guess a rocked-up version of it. Let me see if I can bring Mr. Ty back into the fold. If my boards are working again. Oh, boy. Of all days, we have these issues. Daryl, can you hear me? Let me try this one more time. Sorry, gentlemen, if you're having difficulty getting back in. Let me see if I can get you back in. Live radio, folks. Let me try one more thing.
Hello.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Ty.
Yes.
Sorry about that. For some reason, our boards are having problems. Daryl, are you there as well?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we're back once again, folks. Again, welcome to the Comic Shop. Speaking with Mr. Larry Ty regarding his book, Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. One thing I wanted to ask you about this book also, Mr. Ty, and again, I loved reading it. I could not stop reading it because it was just so compelling. Could you go into a little bit of, I guess, this dispute as to whether or not Siegel and Schuster, they ended up being impoverished, but there was a point where they were not, that they were living somewhat well, but at the end it became bad.
Yes. Honestly, I think the whole dispute has plenty of blame on both sides. On the one hand, Jerry and Joe felt like they had sold their rights to Superman for just $130 and that they had been ripped off. On the other hand, the publishers who bought those rights, these were two young men who were unsuccessful in getting their comic book published and who were hired by the predecessor of DC Comics for salaries that in today's terms would be hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. They were making good money. They were famous all over the world. Their character was famous. And they had gotten they were living out the American dream. Now, should they have had more of an ownership right? Yes. But were they also ungrateful for all the company had given them? Yes. And they were the ones who sued repeatedly over the years. And when the company came back and finally said, look, you're gone, anybody would have done that. So bottom line is everybody deserves blame. And what would be tragic after all of this is if Superman, the character, were threatened by this lawsuit, as it looks like could happen, that pieces of Superman would be given to the heirs, maybe the cape and the flying would go to DC Comics, and it's just the judge who's deciding this case needs to have the wisdom of Solomon to realize that if you rip the baby in half, there's nothing left. And they've got to figure out a way to get this lawsuit behind us and to go on and do great things with Superman for another 74 years.
I thought that the treatment of not only Siegel and Schuster, but their heirs was somewhat reprehensible. That when you go into this, you talk about, you know, promised payouts, promised annuities. Some of it was fulfilled, some of it was not. You know, obviously these business folks knew something was there. And if you were absolutely in the right as a business person, why would you feel compelled to pay them anything? But on occasion, it appeared that the heirs did get some monies, some kind of stipend as they were aging.
They did. They actually got a lot of money. On the other hand, you're right that the reason Time Warner and DC Comics made the payouts was in part because they felt guilty. And at a time, particularly in the 1970s, when Superman was flying high in the movies with Christopher Reeve, that was a time that they didn't want bad publicity about Jerry and Joe to sully their movie production. And yet they were generous in a way that they didn't have to be. After the lawsuits were filed, they could have just said, you know, we're being sued and we're going to cut off the annuities, and they didn't. So as I say, everybody's at fault, and the only way to get it done today is to move beyond it, give them a payout, but also make them, you know, there have been, I can assure you, that payouts have been offered that would make the heirs wealthy for the rest of their lives. And the sad thing is, by the time anything is settled, all the heirs are going to be gone. Jerry's wife, Joanne Siegel, died within the last year, and she was the one who was the driving force behind the lawsuit. And she died in relatively modest circumstances when she could have been a very wealthy lady if only they had settled. And if there's anything we can all agree, I assume the two of you would agree with me, is you don't want all this money going to lawyers. And that's who the biggest payouts now will go to, the lawyers who are bringing a lawsuit.
And, wasn't she the prototype for Lois Lane, ironically?
Well, she was a model that they had hired, that the boys had hired when they were young, and they were trying to envision what Lois Lane looked like. And yet she came in. She was a kid who, like them, and she was in high school. And the idea whether she was really the model, Jerry Siegel acknowledged on Superman's 50th birthday that the real model in his mind for Lois Lane was a girl who was in his classroom in grammar school and high school named Lois Amster. She was a pretty girl who would never look at Jerry, and she was sort of what he envisioned. The actual model who was there and who they drew was Joanne Siegel, who, you know, a dozen years later came back and married Jerry. And and it makes for a very romantic story. So she loved to tell it and didn't like anybody else claiming that they were also an inspiration.
Dal, you had a question?
I was saying it was a perfect analogy, the Solomon's Baby one, because honestly, right now, there's going to be no winner. Well, I think you got it on the head right here. The winner is going to be the lawyers when all is said and done. But there's no winners here. The comic book industry, no, it gets a black eye. The Schuster family, the ones that really needed the money are, like, long gone. So no winner there. Same with the Siegels. It's a conundrum wrapped in enigma, wrapped into a whole bunch of stinky manure, you know?
It is. It will take Superman to get us out of all of this. I mean, what we need is somebody. The brilliant thing is that Superman won more of his battles with his brains than he did with his brawn. And this is precisely the kind of thing, it would just be ironic if this brilliant superhero who survived everything ended up being done in by the heirs of his own creators.
You know, one thing I was thinking about as well, you know, I guess Siegel and Schuster, because of their creation of Superman, Superman is the quintessential superhero. But I think, do you think sometimes their story overshadows what was more pervasive in the industry? I mean, Stan Lee is a wealthy man, but on one end, he has had his fair share of lawsuits. You think of Captain America that just came out last year. Joe Simon recently passed. Quite a few colleagues of Siegel and Schuster that had created heroes that are very popular to this day, especially with comic book movies. Their story is not the only story, is it?
It's not. There are both kinds of stories. There are the stories where, for whatever reason, the creators were talented enough, smart enough, whatever, savvy enough to get a deal done that ended up being good for them forever. And then there are the Siegel and Schuster type stories, which there are a lot of as well, and that is one of the reasons why companies like Time Warner are very aware that whatever they give to the Siegel and Schuster heirs, they might have to turn around and give to the Batman founders' heirs and all their other superhero characters. So everybody's watching it very closely across the industry, and they're worried about precedents. Personally, I care less about precedents than about preserving a character who's managed to defy lots of reasons why he should have died a long time ago. And he just celebrated this month his 74th birthday, and I'd like to see Superman around for another 74 years.
I wouldn't doubt that. One more question, because I know, you know, your time is valuable, but I have to admit I am truly enjoying this conversation. With the way heroes are now, I mean, now there's this whole thing of the anti-hero.
Yep.
And you have Wolverine, you have Batman. All these characters seem to be doing a lot of big box office business. Now we're looking at going back into the Superman mythos next year with Henry Cavill's portrayal of the character. Do you think there's ever, you know, we talk about the malleability of Superman. Do you think there's room for Superman? I know he's enduring, but it's kind of hard to put him in a darker context per se. We've seen other people, other companies do their version of Superman and do that. But Superman that we know, in order for him to work in today's society, do you think that's necessary somewhat? I think Warner Brothers even hinted that because of the success of Batman, that maybe this Superman may be a darker one.
I think that there's a temptation to do that. There has been a temptation over the years to do that. And if they mess with him too much, I think tinkering is what we've been doing for 74 years. Messing with his general persona of being a character of light and not of darkness could destroy him. And I worry about, I think that I've talked to enough Superman fans from all across this country, from Europe, from Latin America, from Africa, from other places, and almost without exception, his being a character of light and of goodness is part of what appeals. So they're smart enough to know they've got a $1 billion character there, and I hope that they're smart enough, and I presume that they're smart enough to know that you can tinker, but you can't mess with the underlying assumption.
Yeah. Oh, no, one more question. Sorry, one more question I have to ask you.
Okay.
That's just a dual-sided thing. With Friedrich Nietzsche and the Overman, Ubermensch.
Yep.
Were they aware of that when they made Superman, or was that because of course that predates
yeah.
Siegel and Schuster's Superman? But I find it fascinating that there's elements of it Nietzsche in this, and at the same time, this is a fictional character that did raise the ire of the Nazi regime. I thought that's
yes.
pretty fascinating. They had a problem with these two kids of Jewish descent creating this idyllic man, and they had problems with these two. They raised a lot of eyebrows.
They did. They
kids,
raised eyebrows.
Two kids in Cleveland.
They did. And the whether Siegel and Schuster were aware of Nietzsche and the Ubermensch, I doubt it. I mean, I think that they were smart kids, but from what I can see about the work that they did in high school and they never went beyond high school, I doubt they were aware of that. They were aware of everybody from Hercules to Samson, and from Doc Savage to the Phantom. It was fascinating. Jerry and Joe used to like to tell stories about how they were the bane of the Nazis' existence and all, and they exaggerated it. But on the other hand, there's no question that the official publication of the SS ran a story attacking Jerry and Joe and Superman in highly racist and anti-Semitic terms. So yes, they were a part of what was going on. They also had fantasies that they were even more important than they were.
And
yeah,
and it's again, irony runs all through it. The perfect ideal, you know, Nazi thing was actually created by two Jewish kids.
Was
you know.
And yet, they would have argued, and I would argue, that the character was in many ways the antithesis of everything the Nazis stood for. And in the earliest days, before America went to war, Superman went to war and hauled back to the Court of Justice Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin. So he was out front, whether it was fighting the Ku Klux Klan before the country was really ready to do that, or taking on the Nazis. You could argue that Superman helped make it legitimate to do those kinds of things in an era when a lot of people weren't about to do that.
And it's also the reason why Afro Nerd brought it up just now. When studios say the way to re-energize Superman is to make him darker, you know, you threaten to lose the very ideals that made him popular in the first place.
Exactly.
You know?
It's one thing to make Batman dark because he was always dark. It's another thing to mess with, you know, the beacon of light. And that's what Superman was. And I think from everything I hear from Warner Brothers, I think they get that, and they're going to do a good job. And what they're really looking for is another Christopher Reeve. They don't want somebody like Brandon Routh, who's a one-movie wonder. They want somebody who can do four movies and be around for a long time.
Well, I think, well, they have a Brit to do this one. That was might be some ironic irony there
that
as well.
Will be. There is irony, and I hope it works, and I hope he can disguise his British accent, because if there was any character that was all-American in his roots, it was Superman.
I think he's going to be successful. I think that he has the look. Again, Mr. Ty, I don't want to keep too much of your time, but your book is really expansive. There's a lot that I didn't get into with you on the book, but I could not stop reading it. So I would implore our listenership to definitely pick up your book. And also, you know, you seem to have a strain of the heroic. You have another book, a New York Times bestseller on Satchel Paige. I could have you on for that for after
show. Anytime you want to have me on for that would be great, and let's talk Satchel, and I appreciate your having me on tonight. It's been fun to be with you.
Right back at you. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Good night.
Night. Okay, once again, that was Mr. Larry Ty. Please pick up his book, Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Endearing Hero. What'd you think, Darryl? I mean, I enjoyed it. I could have kept on going on and on and on.
Yeah, like I said, hey, there's good. See, and folks don't realize that about us, and folks that like Black and others, Stanley Kubrick, they realize that we enjoy talking about everything comics, which goes into the creation, the times, the atmosphere, and this book contains all of that, the atmosphere that these two creators set up, and it poses some moral questions that, you know, that are not easy to answer. I mean, when you work for these big corporations, you know, how much of your work are you going to seriously put in there, knowing that if the character hits it big, you're not going to see that payoff? These two kids at the time, young men, however you want to phrase it, they poured their heart and soul into this because they had to make money. They had to support their families. They had to do that. But these days, it's a very ambiguous moral question, and there is no easy answers for it.
Yes. Again, folks, this is the Comic Shop. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Captain Kirk is persona non grata. Unfortunately, he had something else that came up. These things happen. He will be missed, but he'll come back again on Wednesday and the following Comic Shop show. You know, something else I was thinking about as well that I didn't get into with Mr. Ty was, you know, because there's a lot, folks, going on with this book. I thought that it was an excellent snapshot as far as what Siegel and Shuster were dealing with at the time. You know, we're talking about the 1930s. We're talking about the Great Depression. You know, so many folks were out of work, joblessness, the economy. It's almost a snapshot of what we're dealing with 2012 in some ways. When you read some of the systemic problems that were going on then, but it also spurred a great deal of creativity, and it spurred a lot of people figuring out things and really a lot of desperation and trying to make things work. I mean, these young men, as Darryl just alluded to, you know, these guys were living hand to foot. You're talking about the entire family having to work, young men trying to find a way to make a dollar, literally doing two and three different jobs as well as pursuing this thing. And these kids, sometimes they were, you know, very, the powers that be were very dismissive of Superman. That's one thing I wanted to get into a bit more. I didn't necessarily want to dwell on it, but I thought it should be mentioned. And it's an excellent backdrop or an excellent allegory for today, in the sense that if you really believe in something, you have to pursue it. Because the amount of rejections on Superman, I mean, can you imagine two young men coming up with this idea, and they get responses of, well, you know, it's somewhat juvenile, it's not going to last that long. I mean, people talking with so much certainty, Darryl, that this character was not going to work. And now we're talking about almost 80 years later, and the character is as popular as ever.
Well, hey, you know what? It just goes to show, if you believe in what you're doing, don't let anybody stop you. as long as it's not hurting anybody else, if you believe in your idea, if you believe in your invention, if you really think it can change the world or make you money, and go ahead and pursue it. To do as much as you can possible. How many like 9-10 publication houses freaking closed their doors on Siegel and Schuster saying, oh, this character won't work, this character won't work. And Superman has made billions upon billions of dollars. You know, like I said, the boys and girls, the word for the day is ironic. And this story is full of little ironies. But, yo, don't let anybody dissuade you from your dreams. If you can do it and you got the financial capability to attempt it or make a model or take the risk, go for it.
Definitely. We got about 9 minutes remaining, and I want to go into something else. We have a few more minutes to still continue to talk shop. Let's segue from Superman. Let's talk about Green Lantern, actually. There's a piece, I'm curious about it. There's an editorial in comicbookmovie.com. Again, folks, check out comicbookmovie.com. Dow also writes for AfroNerd as well as Comic Book Movie. And there's an editorial that goes into whether or not, I mean, this is a good question, and I'm asking this of you, Daryl. Should Green Lantern be rebooted, or should we see a sequel?
No, you know what? You don't need to reboot it. You just need to do a sequel. And you have to do the sequel better than the original. All right? For example, X-Men. After the X-Men movie, sure, people said it was cool, but the last 20 minutes of the X-Men movie left people moaning and groaning, oh, God, I wanted a big fight, and this is what we got. What happened? They brought in X-Men 2, and to most people, it was the strongest one of the franchise. Well, here, you have Green Lantern was an okay movie until the last 35 minutes. The last 35 minutes, if you change a lot of stuff that happened in the last 35 minutes, I think you saved that movie. Well, you don't have to start it from scratch. But go out into space. Hey, how is learning? Or here's an ingenious thing. Have Hal be suspended or something happens where the ring finds Guy Gardner. Where the ring finds John Stewart. Where the ring finds, hold on to your horses, Kyle Rayner. You know, if you reboot this, you essentially kick sand in the face of your loyal DC patrons that waited online, that went to see it in 3D. Oh, I have to see this. Oh, okay. Who online to this day still defend this damn movie. If you reboot it now, you're essentially saying, giving a big middle finger to those that supported you on the first one. Comics are not reboot happy. Just tell a better story. You don't need to go back. It's one thing if the movie franchise was 15, 20 years ago. All right? Oh, we got to refresh the new audience on that. Green Lantern came out last year. No need for a reboot. Just go.
I might have to, well, listen, I guess the audience is not going to be shy. I think I'm going to have to disagree with you on this. I think that there's some degree of precedent when we see how these movies go down, that, you know, if a movie doesn't do that well, that when the audience feels like they're going in a second time and not a second time with a fresh start, that they're more receptive to it. And when you see like the Hulk, the second Hulk movie that came out was received a lot better than the first one. You know, Ang Lee's version, which I did not really dislike, but a lot of true comic book geeks did not really endear themselves to the first Hulk. The second one came in, it was accepted as, okay, this is a different actor, it's a different take. I think it's a breath of fresh air, and I think that the stink is still attached to the Ryan Reynolds portrayal of of Green Lantern.
But
let me finish my point.
Go ahead.
I think it's less to do as something to do with him as an actor for this role, and also the writing was just horrible. I mean, it's hard to go back into even the way they treated Sinestro. You know, it made it seem as if at the end, and I've made this complaint many times on air, it made it seem as if he just said, "Oh, ho hum, I feel like being evil now." There was no development into his character. At least I keep on referencing Training Day. Training Day should have been the template, because you're talking about intergalactic police. If they followed the route for Training Day, where the Sinestro character is showing the Hal Jordan character the ropes, and he sees some things going on that make him feel uncomfortable, it also would address the training element of it. It would have been a much better movie. So the writing sucked, and I just didn't feel comfortable with Ryan Reynolds in the role.
Well,
I think they're going to have to reboot this thing.
Well, I'll just say this. If you reboot it, you don't have to tell Hal Jordan's story. All right, here we go again, and it'll happen just like our JLA show a couple of shows back. Someone's going to steal this idea, okay? You start out with freaking colored lights war in space. Sinestro has been forming his own Sinestro corpse, and they're decimating Green Lanterns, and a ring falls to Earth and finds one of the three guys I said before. Said, and along with the ring is a message from a beaten-up Hal Jordan saying, Earth must be protected. The Sinestro Corps are coming, led by, they're coming to Earth. It must be protected. Sorry, I can't take time to train, but we'll be trying to hold them off here, and the ring has chosen you worthy. To Guy Gardner, to John Stewart, or to Kyle Rayner. And essentially, you'll be telling their story as they get ready to fight members of the Sinestro Corps. You don't have to tell Hal Jordan's story with Cal Ferris and his dad and military and the Air Force and Abin Sur. We don't need to go through all of that again. That's the best thing about the Green Lantern Corps. Everybody that wears a ring has a different story. But the one thing they're all connected is they have the willpower and the sense of honor to use it. Well, except for Sinestro, because of course, he sees a yellow ring, he just puts it on. I'm going to be bad.
I just think that you don't go back into the stink. You just don't go back into the stink. On some logical level. I mean, we mentioned this before. Maybe there has to be a Green Lantern Corps movie, you know, where you see as a police force, like in NYPD Blue. You know, you don't just focus on one of the NYPD Blue. You just, it's Law and Order. Law and Order in space. I mean, it really wasn't difficult to do. I mean, it really should have been, even you would agree, Law and Order in space with rings. That's the movie.
Listen,
it's not rocket science.
This movie should have been First Flight. It should have been First Flight. If you did First Flight, all right, say that's how you did the Green Lantern movie, it would have gone over much better. But instead, we get Parallax, we get Hector Hammond, we get a majority of the film on freaking Earth for some reason, you know. But if they did it just like how First Flight was, or similar to that template, there'd be less complaining about it from non-DC brainwashed lackeys.
All right, listen, we got about less than a minute remaining, actually, on the show. We're going to have to close on out, Daryl. Unfortunately, I'm not going to do Afternoon Radio. I was going to, but we're having so many problems with the board that it's
no
a struggle.
Problem.
I don't know what's happening, but for those listening in, folks, I apologize, but we will come back again with the captain in full effect for Wednesday's show. The technical problems are just a little bit too much. I want to thank Mr. Larry Tye for stopping by to discuss his book. Definitely pick it up. It is a very insightful, educational read. Superman, the high flying history of America's most enduring hero. Any closing remarks, Daryl?
Next week,
I take down Marvel and Disney over the Avengers. There's my preview, and you'll see it on the blog sometime this week.
And again, folks, my apologies for the suspension of Afternoon Radio just for this evening, but the technical difficulties are a bit too much for me to overcome. So it was difficult to get through this program. All right, Daryl, we'll do it again next Sunday. Peace out. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.
Spot for the beard?
I think not.